Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. In that war, of course, Congress is an important battle space. It is a place where a lot of the better thinking on national security is being done these days, and much of it is being done by our guest, Representative John Fleming. He represents the people of Louisiana's 4th District, serves on the House Armed Services Committee, notably on its Tactical Air and Land Forces and Strategic Forces subcommittees. He's also a member of the House Committee on Natural Resources and always a welcome guest here. Congressman, thank you for your service as a Navy medical officer, as well as what you're doing in the Congress these days. We're very grateful to you for joining us.
Well, thanks, Frank. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
Thank you. Well, let's talk first and foremost, if we might, about what you make of what has happened north of our borders over the past few days. An attack both on the military of Canada and the persons of two of their service personnel have been killed, and on the parliament there. Could this sort of thing happen in the United States? What's animating it, and what should we be doing about it?
Well, Frank, to be honest, it's already happened in the United States. The episode at Fort Hood, where many people were killed and many more injured with this Army psychiatrist who went crazy, and we know that he was a so-called lone wolf. He became interested in jihadism. He was already a Muslim, but not really a radical one until he began to engage through the internet and other contacts. So I think this is another example. The information's spotty, but we have a guy who recently converted to Islam and became immediately a jihadist. And Canada was monitoring him and knew that there was something about this guy to worry. They wouldn't let him out of the country to join ISIS. And the guy probably got frustrated and decided to go ahead and do it in his homeland. So I think we're going to see more of this, not less, because ISIS, as it grows and becomes stronger over in Iraq and Syria, is certainly going to be reaching its tentacles out into the West.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you used the term, which I think is accurate in this case, jihadism. It is something that, of course, the Islamic State embraces, as it does the principle or doctrine of Sharia that animates jihad, but it's certainly not confined to them. And I'm afraid you're right, Congressman John Fleming, we will be facing more of this south of the border as well as north of it. Let me turn, if I may, to another part of the national security portfolio with which I know you're very concerned, specifically involving nuclear deterrence and challenges to it, notably posed by the Russians at the moment. Talk a little bit, if you would, Congressman, about what you make of the emplacement in Crimea by Vladimir Putin's regime of tactical nuclear weapons. Does that have a security bearing in the region and perhaps beyond as well?
Well, that's very worrisome because that is Putin's way of saying we've secured that area. We know no one is going to come back and try to take it because we've got tactical nuclear weapons that we can use against them. So I think that's a strategy, if you will, in order to maintain and make permanent territory that really is from Ukraine that now becomes a permanent part of Russia. And remember, that all comes out of a very bad deal, the New START Treaty in 2010, where strategic weapons on the nuclear side were brought down evenly to around 1,500, but nothing was done about the many tactical nuclear weapons, which, of course, Russia maintains a heavy advantage. So it was a bad deal from the start. And then in the midst of all of that, the administration actually knew that Russia was treating on their 1987 INF treaty. So it's again it's part of the kowtowing that began with the so-called reset, and this is all being thrown back in our face. Big mistakes made by Secretary Clinton and President Obama.
Congressman John Fleming, the sort of backdrop to this, in addition to all the things that you've said, which are worrying enough, is, of course, that our own tactical nuclear forces, and for that matter, our strategic nuclear forces, have been essentially allowed to, well, I think of it as atrophy over decades. They're many, many years beyond their design service life. Some of them are just downright obsolete. To the extent we see the Russians not only making these kinds of deployments for the reasons you've mentioned, but also engaging, as are the Chinese, as are the Iranians and North Koreans and so on, in buildups of nuclear capabilities, should we be reconsidering what we're doing in this space as well?
Oh, absolutely. And the obsolescence of nuclear devices is not just the tactical ones. We actually have strategic nuclear devices that still have old tube technology from the 1950s. And we do have a program to modernize them, but it's really been going slowly, and we really need to get on with that and get that resolved. But these other countries, particularly China and Russia, they've been modernizing their weaponry and their militaries for some years. So once again, we have a president who has an ideology, a belief, that somehow we can go down to zero nuclear weapons and the rest of the world will follow us. And that's a very naive way of looking at our current situation.
Yeah, this idea of ridding the world of nuclear weapons, starting with ours, is a little unsettling, especially when no one is following.
It's frankly the dumbest thing you could ever do.
Yeah, and I think particularly because it does inspire in others a sense that they can have their way with us, or at least can benefit strategically by building up as we're allowing ours to, at best, atrophy, at worst, be eliminated. Congressman John Fleming, again, is our guest. He is the representative of the 4th District of Louisiana, member of the House Armed Services Committee. And Congressman, let me turn next to another issue I know on which you've been expressing considerable concern. I think it speaks to the kind of larger problem of the president's lawlessness. But talk, if you would, about what you think is afoot now in terms of what some are calling an executive amnesty, an illegal, really, I think, executive amnesty, perhaps for millions of people who are not Americans, who are illegal aliens, but seeking to become Americans, perhaps in short order.
Well, you know, the president promised that he was going to create some form of executive amnesty, but it was never specific about it. Promised that it would be done by the end of the summer, and then his numbers tanked in the area of immigration so badly that, you know, candidates running for office begged him back off, and he has. He's not going to announce it until after the election. But what we find out is the government is letting bids to produce green cards in the millions, probably 4 to 9 million new cards a year. A huge order. And so the question has been, and reporters have been asking the president's press secretary, what's up with this? What does this mean? What can we infer from this gigantic order from contractors? And, of course, the administration is being very coy about it. They're being very clever to say, well, I mean, you know, we order stuff all the time. 9 million green cards a year. And remember, a green card can last up to 10 years. So we're talking about a very big down payment on permanent naturalization, or at least a permanent residency status, by doing something along these lines.
Yeah, without the permission or even the consideration by the Congress. And
without even informing Congress.
Without even informing Congress, which speaks to this point of lawlessness, which has become now so much the leitmotif of the Obama administration and such a challenge to the Congress of the United States. It's one of the reasons why I think we're all holding our breath, hoping against hope that there will be more checks and balances back in the system as a result of this election. Congressman, we look forward to your own successful reelection and your visits with us afterwards. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. And as I say, for your service to our country, both in uniform and now in the Congress of the United States. Congressman John Fleming of Louisiana, keep up the good work, sir. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, a remarkable perspective from a Canadian Muslim, Tariq Fatah, on the attacks by jihadists on his countrymen. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, I'm very pleased to say, joined by a friend and colleague of quite a number of years now, Tariq Fatah, a very courageous Canadian writer, broadcaster, columnist for the Toronto Sun, and a man who is a secular Muslim and very active in the debate about the future of Islam. He is the author most recently of Chasing a Mirage, The Tragic Illusion of an Islamic State. He's based up in Canada, and always appreciative of his insights as to what's happening on that side of the border, as well as more generally in the war for the free world. Tariq Fatah, welcome. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
Obviously, uppermost on all of our minds, I think, at the moment is the jihadist attacks that have taken place over the past couple of days in Montreal first, and then yesterday in your capital of Ottawa. Give us quickly, if you would, Tariq, a sense of what's going on here, why these two episodes, and, well, is more in the offing, in your estimation?
You see, for the last, 10, 15 years, we've been talking about the notion that unless we address the political side of Islam head on, these things are bound to happen. Now, for most Muslims, they're illiterate in Arabic. They don't understand the language. 80% of Muslims are not aware of what their religion's political side is. But when you're a convert, you know all these things on day one. And the fact that there has been a great impetus with funds from Saudi Arabia and Qatar to draw non-Muslims into Islam, put a white face to Islam, if I could say that, this is a manifestation of that. And to attack two institutions of Western society, one is our military and the other is our parliament or the seat of democracy. This was a natural outcome, but I'm still distressed that we are calling people who are clearly terrorists as criminal suspects of that kind. The political correctness has not left us.
Our guest is Tariq Fatah. He is a very courageous man. I had the privilege of working with him in the making of a film called Islam versus Islamists, which described what people like him are up against as they seek to live and practice their faith in a manner that is not a threat to the rest of us, pursuant to this doctrine of Sharia that is informing and advancing under the Muslim Brotherhood and others. Tariq, you were talking a bit about the fact that we are continuing to sort of turn a blind eye to the forces at work within Islam that are bringing us this kind of jihadism that we saw in your native Canada over the past few days. Give us a sense of how that's manifesting itself, that willful blindness in your own country.
Well, I am glad to say that Canada's political leadership, especially the present government of Prime Minister Harper, is less of a problem than the United States or Great Britain, where both your president and Prime Minister Cameron start off by saying Islam is a religion of peace and pay accolades to the Muslim Brotherhood ideology. Prime Minister Harper himself in 2011 identified Islamism as the greatest threat to Canada and the West. But still, there is a large segment in the media, especially the editors, the publishers, the reporters, who do not identify Islamism as the enemy, who do not consider these threats, or not just threats, the actions that took place as a manifestation of Islamism and the Muslim Brotherhood, and who do not see ISIS or ISIL as an extension of that ideology. They look at it in different ways and allow the enemy to breed within us. And that's the challenge.
In fact, in many cases, certainly in this country, we've had the embrace of the Muslim Brotherhood as kind of the authorities on Islam that the government, and I'm sorry to say it was George W. Bush as well as President Obama's administration, that have taken counsel from people who I think, as you've said very clearly, Tariq Fatah, are part of the problem. And give us a flavor of this, if you would, because there is now particularly a preoccupation with this Islamic State business. How does the Islamic State fit in, as you see it, to the larger, well, I think of it as kind of the global jihadist enterprise?
The Islamic State right now is not the first Islamic State. We should start from the Islamic State of Pakistan, the Islamic State of Iran, and the mother of all Islamic states, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and of course its little brother Qatar. All of them have been working against the interests of the United States and Canada and the rest of Europe, while at the same time feeding off everything that we offer to them. So this is going to be a long, drawn-out war. And unless we start treating the soldiers of these Islamic states or their spokespersons as we would do with Nazi Germany or Stalinist Soviet Union, we would not have recognized the problem. It is almost as if we are putting Nazi Germany and Portugal saying, well, we got to deal with each one of these in an equal manner. No, we are at war, and the war has been declared on us.
On a global basis, really. And Tariq, this is such an important insight that we're being told that countries, including those you've mentioned, I would add Turkey to the mix, but Qatar and Saudi Arabia are our allies in countering this this jihadist agenda out of an outfit like the Islamic State. I guess what I hear you saying is that at best this is a double game that they're playing, and at worst they are completely unreliable. Is that right?
Both would be true. Unreliable is, I think, not the right word. This is like having, Goebbels sitting inside the room where Churchill and Roosevelt are having a meeting. It is unbelievable that Turkey would be allowed to be a member of NATO, and then we're supposed to fight the forces of the Islamic State that was created by Turkey. This is, I think there's a lot of money from Saudi Arabia that has entered the lobbying circles of the United States and even here in Ottawa, less so I would say over here. But it's appalling how the Obama administration has dealt with this. And the history will judge it very harshly what happened in Kobani.
I think you're absolutely right. Of course, that being the area of Syria that is currently under assault from the Islamic State, but getting no relief, no help from the Turks, at least to date. And Tariq Fattah, just in closing, to the extent that you could give one word of advice or a brief bit of advice to the president of the United States, is it essentially be more like Stephen Harper and stand up to these guys and understand them for who they are and otherwise enlist the American people in what is truly a counter-ideological war?
I would hope President Obama will pick up the phone and take some advice from Prime Minister Harper in saying that Islamism is the greatest threat in the modern times to Western civilization. And as the head of the free world, it is the moral obligation of any American president to stand up for the rights that we've inherited after 400 years of European civilization. This is a war against the United States. How can we talk about Nazism being talk in terms of blowing tributes to it when we're fighting Hitler?
It's an incredibly trenchant point. And Tariq Fattah, I appreciate both you making it and making it with such courage in your own country and of course, with our audience here in the United States. Thank you for what you do there in Canada. Keep it up at the Toronto Sun. And, of course, with your terrific book, Chasing a Mirage, The Tragic Illusion of an Islamic State. We'll talk with you again soon, my friend. Keep up the good fight.
Thank you. Take care.
All the best. Next up, intelligence professional Fred Flights on the terrorism in Canada and the revelation that there were, in fact, chemical weapons in Iraq after all. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Over the past few days, Canada has been targeted by global jihadists. Two soldiers, one in Montreal, the other in Ottawa, were murdered in cold blood. The second perpetrator went on to fire shots in the Canadian Parliament on Wednesday. Providentially, he did not cross paths with Prime Minister Stephen Harper, who had been expected to introduce new and more sweeping counterterrorism legislation there that very day. Prime Minister Harper responded for all of us by declaring, quote, "We will not be intimidated," unquote. Every bit as important, however, is that we must recognize on both sides of the border the central role being played in these terrorist attacks by Sharia, the Islamic supremacist code to which both of the assailants adhered. Only by knowing our enemy will we be able to defeat them. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them.
When you make fun of them.
When you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change your mind.
They're not going to change your minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Fred Flights, a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy and career professional in the United States intelligence community, having served for about 20 years in the Central Intelligence Agency. Also, he worked as the chief of staff for Ambassador John Bolton when Mr. Bolton was the Undersecretary of State, and he also served on the staff as a professional staff member of the House Intelligence Committee. Fred, it's always good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Good to be here, Frank.
I want to cover a couple of things that you've been working on of late, Fred, with us at the Center for Security Policy and more broadly. Let's start perhaps with a story that first erupted about 10 days or so ago, but keeps percolating, and that is the issue of chemical weapons that apparently were found and were known about at the time of the liberation of Iraq, and yet have only now, just in the past few days, come to light again on the pages of the New York Times. What's up with these reports, and what do you make of their timing?
Well, as you know, the New York Times ran a story, I guess over a week ago, that 5,000 chemical warhead shells and aviation bombs were found by U.S. troops in Iraq after the invasion. Now, we knew by 2006 about 500 chemical weapons had been found, but critics of the Bush administration wrote them off as not counting because they were older, pre-1991 weapons.
So-called not active weapons, right?
Well, they said they were degraded. And there was an intelligence report, and this is in an article I wrote on the Center for Security Policy website, that said these weapons were still very dangerous, but they were still discounted by the administration's critics. But what I think is really stunning is they were not just discounted by the administration's critics. They were also discounted by Bush administration officials, including White House official Karl Rove, who said in a Wall Street Journal editorial he did not want to relitigate this issue. So basically, anyone who raised this issue, including Congressman Pete Hoekstra, former Senator Santorum, former Congressman Kurt Weldon, were laughed at. And they're depicted as fools in editorial cartoons. This issue seemed to go away. Now the New York Times suddenly runs an article that 5,000 of these weapons were found, and U.S. troops were injured by them. And I'm just wondering, how long did the Bush administration know about this? How long did the New York Times know about this?
And to the extent that there was knowledge of it and it was actively suppressed, whether it was by the administration or by the New York Times, it certainly flies in the face of this whole idea that the administration had knowingly, willingly lied to get us into a war in Iraq. And that would seem to me at a minimum to be something that the New York Times ought to acknowledge they got wrong. But so far, that hasn't happened. Fred, let me turn to another subject you've touched on with us at the Center for Security Policy, and that is what you call the high costs of presidential incompetence. What are you thinking of when you point to incompetence as evidence of what the Obama administration has been doing lately?
Well, there's been complaints for some time that this president has a weak foreign policy team. He keeps laying down red lines to American adversaries that he doesn't back up. He's made statements to the Russians about being tough. He clearly wasn't. And now we have the situation in Syria and the Ebola crisis. And what really sparked my concern was the president's decision to name Ron Klain, a Democratic operative who was chief of staff to Vice President Biden and Vice President Gore, to be the Ebola czar. And Klain says the purpose of this is messaging. This is a serious domestic crisis, and we're going to deal with it by spin. And I'm afraid that sort of sums up this administration. We haven't had serious approaches to international threats, to threats facing the security of this country. And I think Klain is just the epitome of this problem.
I couldn't agree more, Fred. And what's so troubling about this is, as our friend Andy McCarthy has pointed out, we've seen this guy at work in the past, spinning for the purpose of basically doing political damage control for the Obama administration. In the previous instance, as again Andy recounts at National View Online, was with respect to the Solyndra scandal, which he seemed to have had a considerable hand in engineering in the first instance and then covering up through the 2012 election. And I just have to say that having a guy who's a messaging maven, a spinmeister, if you will, put into this position in the immediate run-up to an election. And surprise, surprise, what we're hearing out of the administration and its friends is this Ebola thing's under control. We've got this thing licked. I can't believe that's true based on what we've seen happening overseas and the certainty that it will be spreading beyond West Africa. But Fred, the other thing that kicks, it's really the kicker, is when Andy McCarthy's piece came out, the fellow that was trotted out to defend Ron Klain was none other than the Clinton administration's preeminent spinmeister, Lanny Davis. What do you make of that?
I think these people are all of the same mindset. Just like the Clintons were all out for themselves. And the Obama administration sees the Ebola crisis and they see the damage it's doing to Mr. Obama's presidency and his image. They don't seem to be worried about managing the crisis.
Or the damage that it can do to the rest of us.
Well, I mean, that's another issue that they've already tried to blame this on the Bush administration by falsely claiming that Republican cuts to the CDC, which aren't true. Actually, the CDC got more money over the last few years, but that had something to do with the Ebola crisis.
There's a lot of factors at work, but I don't think that's one of them. Fred, let me turn to an issue again that you've been following closely, I know. We've discussed it with several of our guests already, but I would like to get your take on it as a career intelligence professional. And again, Fred Flights is our guest, senior fellow now with the Center for Security Policy. This attack in Canada is sadly the latest of a series that seemingly are now becoming more and more commonplace in the West. Individuals mowed down literally by automobiles or hacked to death or shot up at the hands of jihadists. Talk a little bit about the specifics as we understand them at this point of this Canadian rampage, if I can call it that, and the implications it seems to suggest we ought to be taking from the pattern of which they, I believe, are a part.
Well, the deceased gunman, Michael Ziaf Bibial, was obviously an Islamist terrorist. And I give Prime Minister Harper credit for saying very clearly last night, this was an act of terrorism. This is a man who recently converted to Islam. This is a man who was on a no-fly list out of Canada. This is a man who had his passport lifted and was known to be associated with radical Islamists in Canada. What I want to stress to your listeners, Frank, is that I think ISIS or Al-Qaeda was behind this. This guy was a thug. I don't believe he thought up this intricate plan that almost got near the prime minister by himself. The mode of operations for Al-Qaeda is to find security vulnerabilities. And I think when this guy couldn't leave Canada, he's been in communication, maybe directly or through someone else, with ISIS or Al-Qaeda to stage this attack because they knew there were vulnerabilities in security in Ottawa.
And the likelihood that there will be more such episodes, probably on both sides of the border, given that we still, particularly in this country, are shrinking from describing the sources of this terrorism. And yes, I agree with you. I think Stephen Harper, as our previous guest Tariq Fatah has indicated, has been very much a stand-up guy relative to our own government under both Bush and Obama administrations, sadly. But we still seem, throughout the West, to be facing a reluctance to come to grips with this sort of impetus behind these kinds of attacks, namely the Sharia directive to force all of us to submit.
That's exactly right. This administration has still not called the attack in Canada terrorism. I'm hoping they will. That's not enough. They have to acknowledge that Sharia and radical Islam is behind this attack, and there are more of these attacks, probably committed by homegrown terrorists or lone wolves recruited over the internet, and it's going to be more of them against this country.
Yeah, I fear you're right. Needless to say, the first order of business in trying to protect against that is to understand whence comes this threat. And Fred, on that and so many other issues, we appreciate both your past service to our country and that you're rendering as a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy today. Keep it up, and we'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, Diana West joins us, syndicated columnist and a student of matters involving totalitarian ideologies, on the citizen of the world theory of President Obama and what it might portend for us in the Ebola crisis. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We're joined, as we have the very great privilege and pleasure of being each week, by Diana West, a syndicated columnist and author. Her best-selling books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal, are required reading, really, especially the latter, as it deals with a subject that is still, in its way, incredibly important to understanding the problems that we're facing in our own time. American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character, of course, develops in a remarkable way insights into how, in the past, we have fallen prey to accommodation of and appeasement of and subversion by totalitarian enemies. And Diana, it's so great to have you with us to talk about how some of those same forces are at work in our own time. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, of course. Yes, well, this is such an important point to try to get our arms around. It's a very big story. It's really the culmination of much of the past 100 years. But in a nutshell, what we're looking at is the attrition of the idea of America as a nation state, America with a national interest, America with citizens that we and our leaders value above all others. This is not about supremacism or anything like that. It is really about the love of country and love of one's countrymen. These ideas have been undermined by the advance of Marxism, of Leninism, progressivism, collectivism, globalism. These are all words that describe, they all kind of bring us under the same rubric of where we are today with increasingly global concerns advanced by our own leaders. And I just point us to our border, which basically does not exist, and this deployment of troops to Western Africa where there is no pressing national interest that requires American death to defend it.
I want to drill down on the latter point particularly, Diana, but to just sort of set the stage a little further, what we're dealing with is, as you say, kind of this notion that we're all citizens of the world and that we need to sort of assume global responsibilities, even if they are contrary to national interests and perhaps our own security and safety. And it's in this regard that you've made this point about Liberia. Talk a little bit about what role the president seems to have in mind at the moment for the American military, specifically in these West African nations like Liberia that have been stricken with Ebola.
Well, I think, first of all, it's very important to point out that this decision to deploy troops was taken without Congress, without even a discussion with Congress, let alone congressional mandate, which, of course, is post-anti-unconstitutional. What the mission is very sketchy. We have not really had any kind of clear indication of what they will be doing, aside from building clinics, logistical support, maybe roads, I'm not sure. I mean, it's very vague. The generals who have talked about it talk about it in very amorphous language. They assure us that troops will have no and then minimal, tiny amounts of contact with Ebola victims. And this is where, you know, you start getting very disturbed because, of course, our troops are trained to fight wars and kill people and advance American interests or protect American interests. They are not trained as medics. They are not trained as health organization people. This is so far outside their own mission and understanding of what their role is that it becomes very strange, and you start wondering what's really behind it, particularly with the risk of catching a disease. When we see other humanitarian efforts, for example, in Haiti 20 years ago, I actually looked up what the congressional criteria were, and it was an national interest, safety and security of our troops. And if we think about humanitarian actions, which our military has engaged in, they happen after the disaster. They happen after the earthquake or after the volcano or tsunami or whatever disaster it can be, not in the midst of it, not with risk to their life from the disaster.
Let's drill down on a couple of pieces of this. You've mentioned the sort of mission, such as it is, or such as, at least as it's been defined to us, for these military personnel. You've also described that they may not be either trained or equipped to contend with this very, very dangerous disease of Ebola. We've even seen trained and reasonably well-equipped health professionals catching Ebola, some of them losing their lives as a result. So this is not a trivial consideration. But you've also focused for quite some time now on the problematic rules of engagement that have been given to our military. Tell us what you understand has been kind of the nature of the rules of engagement for these folks going into the hot zone in Liberia.
Well, such as we know, which is just really dribs and drabs, is that our troops will not be armed. That there have been laid out that we have been told no rules of engagement. However, we can imagine what kinds of terrifying scenarios might lie in wait if they are, for example, ordered to guard supplies or ordered to protect a clinic. In a situation in Liberia where you have an extremely uneducated, indeed primitive population, you can imagine in desperation all kinds of scenarios where local people may indeed become quite hostile to Americans who are perceived as guarding the cure, or, you know, some other kind of rumor could go around. So if they are not armed, if they are facing people with this highly contagious virus, you can imagine all kinds of difficult scenarios that will indeed lead to very, very tense situations or loss of life.
And Diana, one of the things that's astonishing to me, but that we've been told by the administration, is their plan in the event that infection does spread to some of our military personnel, they will not be returned here to see the sort of treatment that we've been hearing a lot about lately, the best healthcare system in the world and all of that, but will be confined to treatment there. Presumably, they'll get reasonably good care, but still, what's up with that? And the reported desire of the president, which sort of goes back to your point about, you know, citizens of the world perceived responsibilities of bringing people who are ill with this disease on heavens knows what basis, but nonetheless selecting some to bring here from West Africa to be treated in the United States. How could they possibly do that with some non-Americans and not enable American citizens in uniform to be returned here?
Well, I think this goes back to the original question, which does have to do with the fact that we have leaders with a global agenda, not an American agenda, who have all the power at the moment and certainly act as if they do. We still have our Congress and still waiting for them to step up on some of these important matters, but it's exactly this idea that there is nothing special about America or Americans. Another point to get to is the notion of a commander-in-chief with so little regard for his forces, for the young people of this country who put on our uniform, the American uniform, so little regard that he sees them as pawns in a global game of ideological utopia. I mean, this is where you start seeing the development of a totalitarian government structure.
Without the assent of Congress, yeah. And Diana, as you've pointed out elsewhere, including in your syndicated column and at dianawest.net, this notion that we're indifferent to the dangers that we're exposing our military to, an all-volunteer force is not necessarily going to look the other way at this, I'm afraid. It may be even further impetus to breaking it. Diana, I'm afraid we have to leave it at that. Thank you, as always, for the great work you do at your syndicated column and your writings, including American Betrayal, and for joining us each week. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. We'll look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.